Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the WTF1 That Time When podcast series. I'm Matt, and I'm joined by two of the long-standing WTF1 citizens, being Tom Bellingham and Dan Thorne. Hello, guys.
Hello.
How are we both?
Good, thanks.
Ready to talk about Formula One?
Oui.
Yeah. Oh, hello, French cheeky. Theme. Like it. Yeah.
Today, we're going to be talking about the time that Prost GP ran underweight to attract sponsors. So that's pre-season testing in 2001. Where we will be diving into Prost GP running underweight to set some incredibly fast lap times. But before we go into the exact reasons why, Tommy, I'm going to throw it over to you to give me some insight, some background into Prost GP. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
Oh, groovy. Let's go straight into it.
Good job. I know about it.
Well, I hope so.
Well, yeah, so do I.
I wish I'd not thrown it to you.
So, yeah, 1996, I guess, would be a good place to start. So, Ligier... I think it's fair to say we're very much a midfield team at the time, despite winning Monaco that year.
Yeah.
They did have a lot of success, though, in the 70s, was it?
Late 70s, early 80s. Jacques Lafitte.
And they won races?
Won races.
Yeah, they were pretty good.
Kind of challenged for championships as well. You know, they were one of the top teams for a bit.
Yeah, but they very much became midfield team, sort of... What would you say compared to nowadays, like a Force India, something like that? Might sneak the odd result
in. The odd podium here and there.
Yeah. But in 1997, they got bought out by Prost, as in Alan Prost. Who would have thought?
If you didn't know.
I assume it wasn't Nicholas Prost.
That would have been incredible because
he would have been like 10 or something. Yeah. They bought... Alan Prost bought that team, that French team. And they did pretty well in their first year, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, 97 was kind of a bit of a year change. The cars were slightly different to the year before. But the big change was instead of being a single tyre supplier with Goodyear, Bridgestone came in. But because they were a new tyre supplier, all the teams that went with Bridgestone were sort of midfield teams. But it turned out that the tyres were actually really good under certain conditions. And Prost, being one of the teams with Bridgestone tyres, turned out to be very competitive at certain races, and Olivier Panis actually challenged for wins and was considered a bit of an outside championship contender.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that. That was pretty crazy. I look back and actually at the results, and after six rounds, Panis was third in the championship, which, again, trying to put this into perspective, is kind of the equivalent of Perez maybe being third in the title behind
Hamilton. Or even Alonso and in the McLaren that he had.
Yeah.
Was it last year, right? He was fourth.
Yeah, after Baku, was
yeah.
he?
Yeah, which is ridiculous.
Kept getting seventh.
So it was a big, big shock to the system, 97. But it went all downhill going into the next year, right?
Yeah, so 97, they were still very much Ligier. They ran under the Ligier chassis name. And he very much just bought the team at the start of the year and just ran it. But the first Prost, which I assume was the AP01.
Yep.
Nice. Good work.
Didn't even have that in my notes.
I mean, it could be wrong, but we all trust that Dan Thorne knows
it's
everything.
It's not wrong.
So. And they scored 1 point in 1998. Not a great year.
No. I mean, for 97, they, as you said, just bought Ligier, so they had Moog and Honda engines. But for 98, Prost did this deal with Peugeot, where it was supposed to become like a manufacturer team. Peugeot would provide the engines and provide development. But in the end, Peugeot changed the contract right at the eve of the season. And it was basically just Prost bought the engines from Peugeot and that was it. So they just had Peugeot engines.
So that was the thing that kind of screwed them over right at the last minute with them, would you say?
A little bit, yeah. Because obviously if you're a manufacturer-backed team, you have loads of benefits. But they were just buying the engines from Peugeot. They just happened to be the only team that bought the engines from Peugeot.
They were expected to do well, though. I think they were really pushing to be successful. They weren't just making up the numbers. They even had their own video game from...
I can't say I ever played it.
No.
Did any of us play it? Did you play it?
No.
The 1998 Prost Grand Prix game for the PC. I watched a... walkthrough.
Just someone
playing it on an old PC. And if anyone remembers like the early days, I don't know if it's the case now, but the early days of Pro Evo where everyone had fake names.
Yeah. Because they're not licensed.
Yeah, so it was based on the 1996 season, but everyone had a fake name. So instead of Hakkinen and Coulthard McLaren, it was Arkenyan and Goldhart at Mackinnon. And you had Rubens Marichello and
I love that
Gerhard Merger, Michael von Blacker for Ginelli. So yeah, it was great
Ginelli
game.
Ginelli was Ferrari.
Yeah.
Oh,
great
my
game.
Goodness me.
But yeah, I guess moving on swiftly towards the actual bit that we're going to be talking about. So yeah, 99, they had a better year, snuck a podium, finished seventh in the title. But then 2001 was where the team really went bad.
2001 or 2000?
Sorry, 2000.
Jeez,
sorry,
we're,
yeah, 2000.
We're skipping a year here, Tommy. Let's,
sorry, 2000.
Far too ahead of ourselves. Yeah, so 2000 was a year where they finished with 0 points, finished last behind even Minardi, which is some achievement, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was that classic thing. It was the end of the three-year deal with Peugeot, and Prost hadn't progressed up the grid. Prost blamed Peugeot for not providing good enough engines. Peugeot blamed Prost for not making a good enough car. The truth, probably a bit of both.
Reminds me of Williams, that they had the whole thing with BMW, didn't they, where they were both doing it?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They were blaming each other as well.
I mean, Prost apparently had 57 engine failures alone in 2000, which is ridiculous.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
It would have been a lot of grid penalties if they were a thing back then. But
yeah, I wrote down here, even though DNFs were a lot more common those days, that Alesi finished 5 times in the whole season and Heidfeld finished 6 times in the whole season.
That's...
which is pretty poor reliability. And yeah, they finished behind Minardi just because Minardi got a better result.
Yeah, yeah. And even when the car was running reliably, the drivers didn't help matters because Alesi and Heidfeld hit each other on quite a few occasions. Just
right,
scrapping for like 20th place. So it was just a disaster.
Everything was going wrong. And with that, they lost a lot of sponsors, didn't they? Which was the sort of beginning of the end for Prost GP.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they went from this well-funded team with proper title sponsors. I mean, the car was covered in sponsors. Like, compared to today, it just looks ridiculous, even for a midfield team.
Yeah, go on Google Images and check out a picture of the 2000 Prost car. And yeah, sponsored by Yahoo, PlayStation, Bic, Gate. How what's that cigarette company called? I can never say it.
It's like Gouloise. It looks like Gouloise.
Do you want to try and say it?
Okay, because I'm really good at pronunciation. Gouloise.
It's probably something like... probably like... Gouloise. It's just a noise.
Anyway, it's spelled Gouloises.
Yeah, but they lost that as well. And if you look at a picture from 2001, which we're going to be talking about now, yeah,
very shortly.
They will... it was pretty much a bare car. Bit of a Bron GP style, just nothing on it.
2001, yeah, was seen as a very much a fresh start, wasn't it, for the team, with engines from Ferrari, rebadged as Acer. And we'll dive now into Estoril pre-season testing, unless you had any information, Dan. It looks like you're about to fulfill me with some knowledge.
Well, they weren't called Acer straight away, that's the thing. They were just Prost Ferrari to start with, going into testing. But yeah, Estoril and Barcelona were sort of like the two main pre-season test venues. And at both of them, Prost set some really good lap times.
So Alesi went a second quicker than anyone else in the Estoril test. And there was actually some genuine hype about Prost expecting to be able to score podiums with this. But things weren't as it seemed.
Well, yeah, I was actually looking into it a bit more. And obviously, as of... time of recording this, we have just seen Renault and Toro Rosso, I believe, were fastest in testing. And, you know, while they might have very good seasons, no one's saying, you know, Alexander Albon's going to be on the podium in Melbourne. Like, everyone's a bit, you know, realistic. But after this pre-season test, I found an article from Adam Cooper, who's a well-known F1 journalist, which was originally published in 2001, and it's basically along the lines of a miracle appears to have taken place in the last few months in Paris. After finishing last season in a dire state, Prost Grand Prix is heading towards Melbourne with unbounded optimism. Jean Alesi is expecting podium finishes. So they genuinely thought that was going to be... you know, it was going to be a really good year. It wasn't the case of them... I don't know, in testing, did the drivers know that was what they were doing?
Well, that's the thing. you'd think that the drivers would be in on it, but skipping ahead a little bit, but it's a little bit relevant. Later in that season, Alesi left the team. Apparently, he fell out with Prost because I couldn't find any other verification of this, apart from a comment on the internet, which we all know how reliable they are.
Oh, yeah.
But apparently, one of the reasons why he left was because he wasn't in on the fact that Prost were running the cars underweight in testing, and he genuinely thought the car was a contender and like one of the best cars of his career. And it just turned out not to be.
So it's almost like they were trying to not only get sponsors, but they were trying to get the belief of the drivers as well. And
just get a bit of team morale, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
But how did they think that was going to work? Because obviously then you go to Australia or the first race of the season and the cars have to be legal.
Because they were quickest, they had... So they just signed the deal with Ferrari and they had the Ferrari gearbox...
It was
a gearbox engine and the whole rear end of the Ferrari.
And obviously Ferrari were great at that time. So, you know, getting one of the championship winning back of your car, that's a big deal.
So people were like, okay, this, like Proston is essentially half a Ferrari and now they're going really quick. Maybe this is where things go good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the idea of going quick in testing is to get sponsors, and going back to the Ace thing, it kind of worked because after testing... Acer, which was, they used to make like laptops and things. I don't know if they still do now.
I used to have an Acer laptop.
I did as well, yeah.
Yeah. They basically became title sponsors and then the engines became branded as Acer. So, from a
bit like Tag with Red Bull.
Yeah. So, from a sponsorship perspective, that worked in a way.
Okay. Because I've got in my notes that they didn't really get any sponsors, or was it outside of that deal?
Deal, there might have been some minor ones, but
the car's still very bare compared to 2000 car. Yeah,
you see the pictures from testing and the car is literally just blue with Prost Grand Prix on the side, and then in the first race it's blue with Acer on the side.
So with all this hype going into, you know, coming out of testing and podiums, etc., the car was terrible, as you would expect from the fact that they ran underweight and had an illegal car. They only scored 4 points all year. And then you mentioned that Alesi left the team.
Yeah.
And the team actually folded in the winter of 2001. Dan, you look like you're about to give me some more.
Well, that's the thing. The car wasn't that bad. It was, you know, it wasn't a second lap faster than anyone. And when they rocked up to the first race in Australia, Alesi was 3 seconds off of pole. But compared to, from that first year when the car was basically Ligier, it was probably their best year. I mean, the car was reliable. It was consistent. Alesi was in the top 10 more often than not. But the problem was that because they'd run out of money, Alesi was basically the only driver who was like competitive, and he was at the end of his career. They had to start off the year with Gaston Mazzucani, who was a pay driver, basically.
Right.
But even though he brought money to the team, he was fired after 4 races because he just wasn't performing. And then they had Luciano Berti, replaced him. He was okay, but then he got badly injured in a crash at Spa. Thomas Enger, yeah.
Yeah, so Thomas Enger's quite an interesting fellow.
Why is that, Tommy?
He has been banned because he enjoys a bit of 420 blaze.
that's one way to put it.
Yeah. He has been done. He got done for cannabis. He was actually... So he raced for Prost in 2001 and he was banned. He was investigated in 2002. This was when he was in Formula 3000.
Yeah.
And he... actually got stripped of his title for failing a drugs test. That's correct, right?
Yeah. Or he was disqualified from the last race, which then cost him the title.
Right.
I actually found a great article from BBC in 2002. Christian Horner was his manager. The team manager at the time. And in this article, he's saying, Thomas is absolutely gutted about this. We believe this is a mistake. But my favourite quote is from Thomas Enger's agent, who is quoted, which sounds like a kind of excuse you'd give your parents if they caught you smoking, which was, Thomas could have breathed it in at a disco.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, of all the excuses, that's the one they went with.
Yeah. That I chuckled a lot when I read that. So I had to mention that.
Oh, wow. Well, any more from either of you in terms of Prost GP 2001?
Well, Alesi effectively did a seat swap with Jordan, and Frentzen was the fifth driver who raced for the team. And he qualified fourth at Spa, which was like, wow, this is incredible. Maybe, you know, Frentzen was well known at that time for being great in midfield cars.
Mm.
And it's like, oh, maybe he can pull off some results. But then he stalled at the start, and that start from the back. So all of that effort just went to nothing.
Yeah, they only got 4 points, didn't they, that year? And then it was game over. I assume they just folded. They folded at the end of 2001, right? And
yeah, basically. Started? Well, at the end of 2000, Pedro Diniz bought a share the team. The legend that is Pedro Diniz bought a share of the team. And at the end of 2001, he offered to buy out the team as whole, and it almost became Diniz Grand Prix.
Wow.
I did not know that.
Which would have been, you know, that's going from Alain Prost owning a team to Pedro Diniz owning a team. That's like the next level.
Yeah. obviously.
But apparently Diniz, most of his share was controlled by his father, and Prost didn't get on with his father, so that fell through. There were numerous other deals that fell through. One by Phoenix Finance, who have tried to enter off on a few times, actually. That didn't go through. Prost applied for entry into the 2002 season, and it was rejected, and then it just folded from there, basically.
Oh, a sad end.
It was a sad end. And even more sort of heartbreaking is Alain Prost is always quoted as saying it's the biggest regret of his career starting a team,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean...
Why?
Because it just went so wrong. And also, he's a great of F1. You think he started the team in 97. That was only 4 years after he retired. That would be like if Nico Rosberg started a team next year sort of thing. It's like he's still fresh in the memories of F1 fans.
Yeah.
And then just has this terrible team that does really badly.
Yeah.
It would sort of dampen your reputation, even though it's nothing to do with you as a driver. It's just a bit of a rubbish way to...
I mean, it could have been even bigger because I read quotes from Prost where he said that he was thinking of starting a team after, like, immediately after he retired in 1994, and he was speaking with Senna about it, and they sort of said, oh, let's start a team, I'll start a team, you come and drive for me, sort of thing. So Senna driving a Prost could have been a thing.
Wow. Well, that would have been crazy.
That's one for the speculation. Have we exhausted both of your brains, boys, on that? Have we? Have we done that?
All our facts are dried up.
That's all. It's a pretty interesting topic, really, to be honest. You know, you don't really think about teams doing that so much these days, but then you've got Toro Rosso and Renault going to the top of the timesheets. Who knows? You know,
For Prost, it was a Hail Mary. Just, you know, we've got nothing to lose. Let's just go crazy in testing. And it kind of worked for a year, but you can only do that so many times before people cotton on. And then.
And that's the thing. It will secure sponsorship for that short time. But then, you know, when it's kind of seen as that they'll play these kind of tricks, you know, that's when sponsors, will, you know, when it comes out, that's when sponsors will be like, oh, I'm not touching that with a barge pole.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, I guess, one of the reasons why they didn't survive.
Yeah. I mean, another reason as well is just because that was the time and costs were escalating. I mean, everyone just dismissed Prost as, oh, you know, that's just a failure of a team. That's happened all the time. But then in the next few years, you had Minardi disappear, Arrows disappear, Jordan got sold to another
team. Don't say Arrows disappear too loud because Tommy will start crying.
I will too.
Well, before we start crying, we should probably wrap this one up at that time when Prost GP went underweight and smashed some lap times. Thank you so much, guys, for taking part. A bit weird for us to do audio only, isn't it? A bit weird to not have cameras in our face. Well, not for you, Dan, because you've...
No, I don't exist, remember. But, I'm just a...
Yeah. I think the weirdest thing after the first one was normally we're used to putting stuff out on YouTube and we get an instant sort of, this is hilarious or this is terrible.
Yeah.
So... Please do send us a message and let us know if you like it, if you can think of any more topics that you'd like being covered.
Yeah, definitely. You know, definitely come in with topics and things that you'd like us to talk about. It's a new format. It's something that we'd like to keep, you know, concise, quick. And I think we've talked for a little while, but, you know, we've enjoyed ourselves. But so, yeah, leave us a message. Use the hashtag WTF1podcast on Twitter. Leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts if that's where you're going. And if not, please go on there because we want to get up to number one, beating all the podcasts in the world. And that's it. Thank you so much to Tommy and to Dan.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
We did that exactly the same last time. We do it in the video podcast as well. You go, see you next time. Bye. And then it's just the English thing that you just go, bye.